My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card. You call the number for help and you can't get a hold of anyone. If only you had a Discover card. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right, a real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discovery.com/creditcard.
Looking for hair removal tools that not only deliver smooth results, but also empower you with a sense of complete control? Enter Conair Girl Bomb, your secret weapons for smooth, sleek results, made just for women. From the ultimate Girl Bomb grip and professional-grade blades, you don't have to compromise and settle for less. Conair Girl Bomb equips you with the precision and power previously reserved for men's grooming tools. So take your hair removal routine to the next level with Conair Girl Bomb. Available at conairgirlbomb.com or a retailer near you.
There Are No Girls on the Internet is a production of iHeartRadio and Unboss Creative. I'm Bridget Todd, and this is There Are No Girls on the Internet. Okay, producer Mike, you ever listen to podcasts and on the first couple of minutes, they just start with some like light banter? They're asking how they're doing. They're checking in on their week. What are you watching on TV? Yada, yada, yada. Have you experienced this?
I have experienced this. I feel it's like the norm among podcasts, and maybe we should give it a shot.
Yes. So for folks who have been listening to There Are No Girls on the Internet since the very beginning, all the way back in 2020, y'all probably know that I don't do a ton of banter. I just get right into the episode because I really respect the time of the listener. You know, you're giving me your 45 minutes, your hour, whatever. I appreciate it. But I listen to podcasts and I'm like, oh, I wish that I could talk about my day for like just a couple minutes, like see how, like I'm rewatching shows on TV. I'm doing a 6 feet under rewatch. Like, I want to talk about what's going on in my life. This is us soft launching a little bit of light banter before we get into the topics. Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds good to me. I mean, I think, you know, people want to be able to ease in. We don't need to just jump straight into Elon Musk and Google and, you know, whatever else is going on. We can just start with some light banter, like 6 feet under rewatch. That sounds fun. How's that going?
Yeah, it's going well. If folks don't know what 6 Feet Under is, it's an HBO show that took place that started in like 2001 about a family that owns and runs a funeral home. It's very good. I'm doing a rewatch. Also, by the way, I literally, this is how pathetic things are. I Googled when we were like brainstorming podcast banter. So I was like, what do you people talk about? I spent 20 minutes trying to think about topics that were good for banter. The first one was Linda Yaccarino, and you were like, maybe let's not have it be related to the content of the show. I Googled podcasts known for good banter. The one that came up is like an iHeart icon, Stuff You Should Know. I listened to a bit of their banter. I was like, oh, it is very good banter.
Yeah, they've got really good banter. You think that's the secret to their success?
They've been bantering for like however long, that show's been on forever. So like they've gotten a secret sauce. Also, they do a really good job of referencing other folks on the team. So it'll be like, oh, Jerry, our producer, is not here, but here's a little joke about Jerry. Like they have a fleshed out universe.
Okay.
You know, the Stuff You Should Know universe is very vast.
Okay. So maybe that's the secret to good banter, just having a fully fleshed out universe full of characters, things that people would talk about.
Maybe that's it. Y'all, this is our first attempt. This is our banter soft launch. When you listen to later episodes, there will be a little bit of banter. Not too much. We're not talking like 20 minutes of banter on an hour-long podcast. Absolutely not. Never. But you could give me, I could get 5 minutes to talk about my day.
Be like a Daniel Day-Lewis podcast. There will be banter.
There will be banter. Expect it. It's gonna happen.
Yeah, we're gonna get better at it. We just gotta keep bantering. It'll start to feel natural. We can talk about things that are not Linda Yaccarino. not that there's anything wrong with talking about her, but it feels a little bit like the substance of the show, not really like banter.
Because the banter has to be unrelated to the topic. It's like you're easing in. So it's like, how was your week? What are you watching? How's therapy going? All of that. Like, it's like, yeah, unrelated to the meat of the show. So it'll get better. If this sounds awkward, it's our first time. Cut us some banter slack. We are banter neophytes, but we will get better together.
Yeah, I think that went okay. Can we get into it now?
I think we can get into it. I think 4 minutes, that's a sufficient amount of banter. Ooh, respectful to the listener and eases you in.
Okay, we got through it. Thank God. Let's get into it.
Okay, so I have to start with something that is a little bit of a personal pet peeve of mine, and that is bad reporting on tech that is so hell-bent on fear-mongering that it actually ends up obscuring the real issue. So recently, Apple released a feature for iPhone called Name Drop, where if you have two unlocked iPhones or other Apple devices, iPad, Apple Watch, and then bring them close together, you can trade contact information automatically. I can see this having all kinds of use cases, networking, happy hours, all of that. Police in Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and other states put out warnings about this feature, saying that it was potentially unsafe and that kids and other vulnerable populations should be wary of it. If you Google Apple Name Drop, the first things that you get are these like breathless headlines from local news outlets and then bigger outlets that I think should know better, and also Fox News.
I mean, to Fox News's credit, I would not expect them to know better.
That's true. So Fox News's headline about it: police urge parents to turn off Apple iPhone setting dangerous to kids. So it already just like deems the setting is dangerous to kids. So here's the actual reality. Unlike something like AirDrop, where your phone doesn't need to be very close to another person's phone, your phone needs to be pretty close to use NameDrop, almost touching. And both phones need to be unlocked. So it is really unlikely that some creep is going to be able to get your information without you meaning to give it to them. And if a stranger who you don't know is already that close to your unlocked phone, trust me, you have bigger privacy and security issues to attend to in the immediate than someone getting your contact information via name drop. Do you know what I mean?
If you've got your phone unlocked, just like sitting out and somebody can get close to it, yeah, they can get way more than just your name. They can take your phone. They can do all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I've actually heard of a scam where people ask you, like, oh, can I make a phone call on your phone? I'm lost. And then if you unlock your phone and then hand it to them, then they have access to, like, your unlocked phone, right? And so, like, yes, if a stranger who means to do you harm is, like, physically close to your unlocked phone, that is a problem, but not just because of this new feature, name drop. And I think there is like some wider conversation to be had about the risks inherent in having things like default settings or features on your phone that you're really not thinking about, because name drop is a default setting. Like, having it switched on is a default setting on iPhone now. And so I do think that like there is a conversation about the risks inherent in that, like how Venmo's default setting is just set to show everybody your transactions all the time unless you go in and change that.
Yeah, that one is wild. People should be talking about that. We had somebody at work the other day who had a personal family situation where we were all collecting money to send them. We're going to send them flowers and like a gift card. And the person who was coordinating said, hey, Venmo me. And so I logged in and Venmoed them some money. And I could just see in the public feed, like, several of my coworkers had not turned off the setting to make all of their transactions public. And, that was like a harmless thing. But it's just so wild to me that people are out there living their lives, publicly posting their Venmo transactions for all of the internet to see.
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. I don't think that if you've never really thought about it, people might not know that the default setting is public. I'm sure folks like Matt Gaetz would love to be able to go back in time and know that information and change it, right? Also, I feel like it's one of those things where it's like, if you are way deep in the trenches of online monitoring, like an ex or an ex's new flame, and everything is set to private, and you're like, all I have is the Venmo emojis, trying to discern like what's going on over there that's when you know you're like in the trenches. But that's how you know you're really in the trenches. So yeah, I do think that there is a conversation to be had about default settings that you just sort of don't think about. And I should say that if you don't want to use name drop on your phone, or you do have a child who has an Apple device, or like an elderly person who has it, you can turn it off. We'll throw the instructions of how to do that in the show notes. However, that is very different than police and local media spilling so much ink over breathless warnings about some nebulous threat that is so unlikely to happen without giving any kind of appropriate context. In a piece called Name Drop is Safe, The Fearmongering About It Is Not, Shira Ovid for Washington Post breaks down what I find so frustrating about this reporting that is basically trying to scare you about nothing when it comes to technology. She writes, "We spend too much time worrying about the wrong things in technology, and that is partly the fault of public officials and news organizations that can make anything sound scarier than it really is." I think she really hit the nail on the head here. She's absolutely right. I think local media loves a like big, scary, puffed up tech story. And what annoys me about that is that there are very real reasons to be worried about technology, skeptical of technology, asking questions about new technology that has rolled out. If you listen to this podcast, you already know that I am the biggest proponent in the world of that. We cover it all the time. However, there's also a finite amount of things that we can worry about and like keep in our own heads. And that is also true when it comes to technology. So we should really be encouraging folks to be savvy consumers of technology and also helping them educate themselves about the actual risks that are in a way that is grounded in reality, not just fear mongering.
It's such a weird story to be picked up and to become like a scary tech story. Like, I wonder what it is about this one that got the attention of people or fit.
I mean, this is just my opinion, but I think it kind of relates back to some of the ways that we've heard kind of threats to children online being talked about by lawmakers or police. Like, I just think that it's an issue where there are actual very real threats to everybody, children being a vulnerable population, very much included. And I think that there is just like inherent anxiety around that. And so when you have police going out and being like, oh, this is a threat, they never explain like what the threat actually is. Like, again, like if a stranger is that close to your child and both of their phones are unlocked, that is a threat, but not just because of name drop. Like, it's such a weird way to frame that. And I think it's rooted in anxiety of technology is posing a harm to children, a harm that we don't really know enough about, a harm that we're not really prepared to really deal with meaningfully. So let's just scare people and they will definitely like this story really blew up. It was everywhere. And I think because people feel so powerless when it comes to keeping their kids safe around technology, that of course it's going to go viral.
That makes a lot of sense. And there's something about this particular threat, you know, real or imagined, that is very familiar and easy to understand and like comforting. It's like some creep is going to get your child's name and phone number. Like, I can understand that. I can wrap my head around that. When we talk about a lot of the threats of like AI, you know, the threat is that your group might be underrepresented in the training data that might cause nebulous systems to do things that harm you. That's much more difficult to understand.
Absolutely. And I just had another thought. I think last summer we did a couple of episodes about the moral panic around things like trafficking and stranger danger. And I just think that like this is tech facilitated stranger danger of like, oh, this technology is going to weaponize strangers to be a harm to your child in new unforeseen ways. And it's like, yeah, if a stranger is that close to your child, it might be dangerous, but not just because of name drop.
Yeah, that's a good perspective, too. It's like, yeah, tech-enabled stranger danger. It's so, yeah, it's interesting that this story picked up so much steam, got so much attention. Meanwhile, the real threat is out there on a different platform.
Let's take a quick break. Hi, it's Bridget Todd, host of There Are No Girls on the Internet. Listen, technology has made our lives easier in some ways, but it's also made us homebodies, scrolling mindlessly. Well, you get the point. Let Rails to Trails Conservancy unstick you from home. When you get out on a trail and get to walking, you'll feel so good. Trust me. You'll see that being out on the trail is so much more than a day outside. It's good for your soul. Get ideas for getting outside on the trail from Rails to Trails Conservancy, the nation's largest trails, walking, and biking advocacy organization. Visit railstotrails.org/iHeart and on social media at Rails to Trails. So in 2024, one of my goals is to finally get serious about my finances. It's been kind of a big emotional thing for me. Thinking about money historically has caused me a lot of anxiety and stress because I have a lot of trauma related to money. And if you can relate, if that sounds like you, check out Fearless Finance. Fearless Finance provides on-demand, comprehensive financial planning by the hour. It's a new way to get financial advice without all the headaches, high fees, and commitments that come with traditional financial advisors. Fearless Finance planners don't sell anything. No used car salesman vibe here. And that means no concerns about being sold something just for the commission that it earns a rep. Their planners meet you where you are on your financial journey. No judgment, whether you're looking to buy a house, optimize your savings, or just want to make sure your finances are okay. They can answer your questions and help you achieve your goals. No question is too small. No problem is too big. Fearless Finance is making financial advice more affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually, and they charge by the hour. Visit fearlessfinance.com today to get started. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit. And you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use code GIRLS.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
And we're back. Gotta throw a quick heads up on this one because it does involve harm to children. And that is a new damning Wall Street Journal report on Facebook and Instagram just dropped. And this time it is in partnership with the Canadian Center for Child Protection. So this damning report found that when someone searches hashtags on Instagram that a child abuser might be searching, things like children's gymnastics, disgusting, I know, ads from big brands are then surfaced next to pretty disturbing content containing children. So for this report, they basically got a dummy account and then searched things like children's gymnastics. The report reads, Instagram's system served jarring doses of salacious content to those test accounts, including risque footage of children, as well as overtly sexual adult videos and ads for some of the biggest U.S. brands. In a stream of videos recommended by Instagram, an ad for the dating app Bumble appeared between a video of someone stroking the face of a life-size latex doll and a video of a young girl with a digitally obscured face lifting up her shirt to expose midriff. In another, a Pizza Hut commercial followed a video of a man lying on a bed with his arm around what the caption said was a 10-year-old girl. Disgusting. So after the report dropped, Bumble and Match, which is the parent company of the dating app Tinder, actually suspended their advertising across all Meta-owned platforms. We have no desire to pay Meta to market our brands to predators or place our ads anywhere near this content, said Match spokeswoman Justine Sacco.
Justine Sacco, why does that name sound familiar?
So Justine Sacco, this is such an aside. The reason why that name sounds familiar to you is from Has Justine Landed Yet? So Justine Sacco was this woman who, she's been working for Match Company for like, I don't know, since 2015. She was on a plane and she tweeted something like, oh, on my way to Africa, hope I don't get AIDS. Just kidding, I'm white. And then she got on a plane to Africa and turned off her phone. And I guess during this flight, there was like such pandemonium that I remember this so clearly. Has Justine landed yet? Trended. Like people were like, we got to meet her at the airport. This woman tweeted this, probably had no idea the like chaos that was happening online while she had probably had her phone off on this flight. So that's why that happened in 2015. That's why Justine Sacco's name sounds familiar to you. And at the time, she worked for Match Group then, still works for Match Group now.
Damn, that was her. I remember that story. It was obviously like a pretty offensive thing to tweet, but the story itself was so hilarious because, yeah, this whole internet firestorm like exploded while, yeah, she was probably asleep and like tossing back cocktails on the flight.
Yeah, it is. The internet lives forever. And when that happened, when I followed that story in 2015, who would have thunk that here in 2023, I'd be citing her as a spokeswoman still at Match Group? You know, what can you say?
But, you know, it seemed like at least in this quote, she's on the right side of justice.
That's right. That's right. So the way that Meta is responding to this is really similar to the episode that we did recently breaking down Twitter's lawsuit against Media Matters, where Twitter accused Media Matters of manufacturing the circumstances for inappropriate content to be shown alongside ads, because Media Matters did probably like make a dummy account where they followed a bunch of Nazi accounts or at least interacted with them and then were surfaced that kind of content by the platform. Facebook's response is basically the same, that the Wall Street Journal and the Canadian Center for Child Protection were only surfaced this inappropriate content because it's what they were searching for. In a statement, Meta said that the experience was, quote, manufactured, saying, these results are based on a manufactured experience that does not represent what billions of people around the world see every single day when they use our products and services. So basically, they're arguing that only a very small group of people interested in content that sexualizes children and interested in finding that content on their platform would be getting that experience as a user.
It's a pretty weak defense.
Very weak. And to me, it really goes back to what Dr. Caroline Orbueno said about Twitter, that these are a known thing called informational dark spaces that occur when somebody combines search terms that are probably not being searched by a ton of people, but are being searched by bad actors, often extremists, people who are interested in doing bad stuff online. And they can coordinate in those spaces because generally people are not really looking there and the powers that be aren't really looking there either. So saying like, oh, well, only a handful of people searching like very specific things would see this is not really a way to address it. Like these kinds of dark zones are easily exploited by bad actors precisely because of that attitude that says that tech platforms really don't need to be paying attention to them, let alone solving for them. And I also think this defense is really telling. Like part of me wonders if this is another symptom of what I heard someone describe as Musk contagion syndrome, where Elon Musk sort of sets a tone and that other people in tech are like, oh, well, if Elon Musk is getting away with it, I guess I'll do it too. Because Musk really got defensive when Media Matters pointed out, you know, that anti-Semitic content on Twitter was showing up next to ads. And that is how it sounds to me like these Facebook spokespeople are responding as well. And I don't know, I don't think, having done a lot of like platform accountability work before, I haven't really heard Facebook respond in this way. And so I do wonder if this is somehow, you know, learning how to do it from Elon Musk or being like, oh, well, we could just get defensive about it and be like, well, only a few people are seeing that, rather than outlining how they are going to fix it and taking accountability for it.
Yeah, it does sound exactly like what Twitter said. What was it, like last week or maybe the week before?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they kind of did get away with it. So why wouldn't Meta just try the same defense? But it's it's such a weak defense, and it's like, not only is it a weak defense, but it's just morally bankrupt, right? Like, they're serving up child sexual exploitation material. Maybe they should try to, like, stop doing that. That would make a lot more sense to me.
And I think that's ultimately my problem with the entire thing. Like, I am grateful to the Wall Street Journal for staying on Facebook's neck in this way, because they've been really doing a lot of good reporting about Facebook. And I'm grateful to the Canadian Center for Child Protection. But the thing that really gets me about even the framing of this story is that it seems like the only real way to make any noise about this is to get brands to pressure platforms. It is great that these brands are responding and, like, pulling their ads and, you know, letting these companies feel the heat. I think that's great. But the fact of the matter is, these platforms have content that sexualizes children on them. And it shouldn't take a, like, I guess my concern is not that there would be an ad for Tinder next to that content. Like, I think it's great that these brands are responding about how inappropriate that is. But ultimately, I don't think it should take, like, a dating app getting upset for the platform to address it publicly. And I think especially doing so in such a defensive way just doesn't make me think that it's something that these companies really see as a problem, insofar as it is not a problem for them making money from these advertisers.
Yeah, I completely agree. It feels a little gross and just strange that so much of this conversation is about the impact on brands and how this kind of material is going to cause brands to not advertise on a certain platform. Like, that makes sense as an organizing strategy for organizations like Media Matters, but it's feels like it takes up an inappropriate amount of space in the larger conversation about why this is something that we should care about.
I could not agree more. And it's like, ultimately, Tinder and Match Group and Bumble will be fine. They have billions of dollars. They'll be okay. What about the kids who are being exploited? What about the young people who are in this content? What about, like, on Twitter, what about the people who were harmed by the fact that there is anti-Semitic content on the platform? Like, I guess I don't like that the brand's responses, we're at this point where the brands are, like, the voices that matter, but it does seem to be the way it is, that, like, that is the way to get companies to respond publicly, is, like, that bottom line. And I guess it just makes me sad that that seems to be the only way to get any kind of real accountability.
Yeah, it is sad.
Okay, so speaking of Canada, we do have a quick update on a story that we covered earlier this summer. Y'all might remember that after Facebook threatened to ban news content on the platform to protest the Online News Act, a Canadian law that would require Facebook and other tech companies to pay news publishers, Facebook actually went through with it and did ban news in Canada. So when you shared a news story on Facebook or Instagram in Canada, it just showed up as, like, a blacked out post. And they did this before the law went into effect during a really deadly wildfire season in Canada, which actually prevented people from getting critical news about things like evacuation. So really nice going, Mark Zuckerberg. Well, when this was all going on, Google was similarly threatening to block news in Canada. But now that is not going to happen, because Google announced on Wednesday that they will not be pulling links to Canadian news outlets after all. Google and the Canadian government came to an agreement. In a statement, Google said, "Following extensive discussions, we are pleased that the government of Canada has committed to addressing our core issues with the bill. We don't yet know the specifics of this agreement. If we find out more, we will definitely let you know." But a Google spokesperson did say that the government addressed Google's previous concerns about creating, quote, uncapped financial liability for linking articles, and a report indicates that they will pay millions of dollars to publishers as part of this deal.
Huh. So this is a story where people talked through it like reasonable adults and reached an agreement that everyone found acceptable?
It seems that way.
That's pretty great.
We don't get to report a lot on that.
We don't. I don't really know what to say about it. I like want to be sarcastic and cynical, but this sounds kind of like a win.
You know, on this show, we always say we got to take our W's where we can.
It's true.
And major shout out to The Verge for great reporting on this whole situation.
Yeah. And I thanks for bringing this up again. You know, I think this is a really important story, even though it's in Canada. A lot of Americans don't spend a lot of time thinking about Canada, but, you know, it's a pretty important country, pretty great country. And I think they're really addressing some serious issues with that bill about trying to get news organizations paid for the content that social media platforms monetize. And it's really nice to see that news seems like news organizations are going to get paid, and Google will continue to be able to return news results. It seems like a win-win.
I hope so. And like I said, if we get more information, we will definitely let y'all know. So I have another quick update for y'all. We did an episode about TikTok Shop and why it is taking over everyone's TikTok For You page. Mike, I know you don't use TikTok, but TikTok Shop is like this very aggressive in-app shopping functionality that TikTok rolled out. And it's just like ad after ad after ad after ad. So it's like regular sponsored content on top of TikTok Shop ads that are like, seem like they're just regular TikToks. Like, oh, I'm just your friend telling you about this really cool body oil set or whatever, on top of the regular ad. So it's like ad city on TikTok right now.
Okay, interesting. Are the ads good? Are they like relevant stuff?
What a good question. Sometimes. I will say TikToks, and if folks want to know more, we did an episode about this with a friend of mine, Tamika, who goes by Pretty Critical on TikTok, who is the most successful TikToker I know in real life. So TikTok is sort of known for having an algorithm that's supposed to like really be tailored to you and who you are as a person and all of that. I will say that TikTok, in my experience, anecdotally, it's good at knowing your insecurities, and it is surfacing you items to buy based on what it thinks your insecurities are.
Okay, interesting.
You're like, that sounds awful. I don't want
it. It does. I mean, it sounds like an effective way to sell stuff, but yeah, it sounds awful. You're right. I'm not really on TikTok. I look at Instagram more often, and you know, I do have to hand it to them. Their ads are generally stuff that I'm interested in. Like, they've cracked that code.
Oh, the algorithms, they know. So in that episode, we talked about some of the issues on the platform, including sellers selling unsafe and counterfeit products. Well, literally right after that episode was published, a bunch of TikTok creators woke up to find their TikTok shops disabled overnight. TikTok cracked down on thousands of sellers who were allegedly selling illegal goods on the platform right before Black Friday. This means the money that they made on the platform that was in their TikTok account, they can no longer access. Now, honestly, this might be a little bit of a fuego take, so hear me out. Generally, I have a lot of sympathy for people who feel like they have been harmed by big tech platforms, generally. Like, usually that's how I show up. However, I gotta say, I don't really feel bad for these people. You know, I would definitely be pissed if I had actual money in a TikTok account that I could not access. So I get that. But this is a consequence, and I would argue an obvious consequence, of selling illegal goods online. You just can't do that. I remember when I was like researching for that episode and just my experiences of being on TikTok, I would be like, wow, when is TikTok going to crack down on this? It is only a matter of time. As we discussed in that episode, some of the things that people were selling weren't just counterfeit goods. Like, I don't really care if, like, you know, Christian Dior is losing money because somebody is counterfeiting their perfume. Some of the stuff they were selling were genuinely harmful, right? Beauty products that had ingredients that you actually need to talk to a doctor to get, or counterfeit goods that actually had lead in them. Like, I think somebody was selling Stanley tumblers that were knockoffs that weren't safe. And so people could be selling things that could actually make you sick and hurt you. And I don't really feel a lot of sympathy for people facing consequences for using TikTok to do that. And if TikTok had not cracked down on it, they were obviously risking being fined as a platform. So what I think is really interesting about this whole conversation is that I've seen so many creators on TikTok complaining about this, being like, I woke up and my TikTok shop was banned, like incredulous as to how their shop could have been banned. I will say this, TikTok does use kind of an opaque point system where if you get a certain number of points, then you're banned from selling on TikTok shop, which I don't really agree with. I think that if you're violating a rule, there should be transparency from the side of the platform about what rule you broke, how you broke it, and like in what way you were going to face consequences. So like, I can kind of understand why some of these people felt like they didn't get enough warning if they went to bed and they had 3 violation points and then they woke up and they had over the limit of violation points that led to their platform being shut down. I get why people feel like they were not adequately warned, but I also have seen people say like, I wasn't doing anything wrong. Like I was just selling things that I made. And it's like, yeah, the things that you were making were obviously knockoff Stanley tumblers that you were then putting a Disney logo on. So like, that's the claim right there. Like it's copyright claim, right? So like you would go to these people's pages and it's like, oh, well, those obviously you were selling knockoff Lululemon. That's why you got popped for it. And so I think the vibe around people being like I saw someone say that they felt like TikTok was targeting smaller creators. And I was like, I don't think that people are being targeted. Like, I think that people were genuinely doing something illegal and that TikTok did not want to get fined themselves. And I think that TikTok probably saw Black Friday as a big test to how their shopping functionality was going to go. And they knew they had to get some of these people selling illegal and counterfeit goods off the platform before that happened.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I mean, there are still Congress people talking about trying to ban TikTok. So I can imagine that's another incentive the platform might have to crack down on illegal activity happening on the platform. And not just illegal activity, but like illegal commercial activity, right? Like that's one of the most flagrant illegal things you can do is like sell illegal stuff.
Illegal commercial activity that runs afoul of Disney. Ooh. Of all the people that I would not want their like lawyers on my back, Disney is a problem. It's like, it might not be number one, but it's up there.
They literally wrote our copyright laws.
Is that true?
Yeah, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. People call it the Mickey Mouse Act. It's like, what was it, like 1998, 99? Because Mickey Mouse was about to become public domain, and Disney aggressively lobbied to pass this like sweeping overhaul of copyright law to like extend their copyright on Mickey Mouse and like other stuff. And so I mean, it's a little facetious to say that they like wrote the entirety of US copyright law, but US copyright law is very much shaped by Disney's lawyers and lobbyists.
So yeah, if you're a TikToker that has 7,000 followers, what makes you think that, like, of course TikTok doesn't want that smoke. Like, of course, who would?
Ron DeSantis, I guess.
Ron DeSantis. He did for a little bit, and then he was like, can't we all just get along? Like,
I think we can call it good. Please.
Let's just agree mistakes were made on both sides and go our separate ways.
We're cool, right? Right?
So I think the conversation that TikTokers were having about like how they didn't understand what they had done wrong and all of that, I think that is a symptom of a larger issue, which is when the online retail landscape is full of drop shippers and people selling stuff who really have no business in retail, like really don't know what they're doing. Like, if you don't understand that you are selling an illegally copyrighted knockoff, I don't think that you should be like running a TikTok shop, right? And so we cited a piece in The Atlantic in the episode that we did about TikTok Shop called The Junk Has Won, how on platforms like TikTok Shop, you know, TikTok is not responsible for finding, marketing, packaging, selling, and shipping the items, but they're taking a cut of the items sold while pushing that on to a third party. And so this model, of course, is going to come with issues like people selling knockoffs or illegal goods or just things not being on the up and up because it's incentivized by the platform, right? TikTok moves so quickly. Whatever the trendy new thing is, whether it's a body oil or a workout set or a tumbler or whatever, the demand for it is so churn and burn that it doesn't surprise me that people who are just like trying to make money are turning to sketchy knockoffs and sketchy counterfeit goods just to ride that wave. And I do think it's incentivized by how the platform works. So maybe this is TikTok's attempt to course correct on this, TBD. However, the one piece of advice I can give to anybody out there who is thinking about doing this is don't run afoul of the FTC because they will come after you. This is very serious. I think that people think that like, oh, well, I'm just a small creator. It doesn't matter if I don't follow the rules. It absolutely does matter. And this stuff is like serious and like you can wind up with fines or worse. So yeah, don't mess with Disney. Don't mess with the FTC. Stay on the up and up. Trust me. Trust me.
Yeah. And don't scam people, right? Like don't sell fake stuff.
Yeah. I mean, we might have different opinions about this because I feel like, do I really care if Lululemon is losing money? I mean, I guess it's not great, but like,
I mean, I don't know that you even need to care about Lululemon, but like, think about the person who's buying it, who thinks that they're buying a like legit Lululemon garment, and then it arrives and it's definitely not that, right? Like,
but why would Lululemon be $6? It's like $100.
So you're saying they should know better?
I'm not saying they should know better. I'm saying fair. I'm feeling defensive maybe because I can't sit here and say that I don't have some knockoff items. Maybe a few of us have bought a knockoff handbag here and there, not on TikTok shop where I bought it is my business. Maybe people that I know have bought a couple knockoff items in their day and they were looking for knockoff items and they procure knockoff items and knockoff items they happily have. Maybe that's the situation.
Well, you know, in that situation, that's different from what I was talking about, where somebody was being deceived,
okay,
right? Like if both the seller and the buyer, everybody understands that it's a knockoff item, that's one situation. But if, you know, if the buyer is being deceived and thinking that they're buying a legit item, but it is actually a knockoff item, then you've got deception happening and now you're in unethical territory.
That's fair. That's fair. More after a quick break. Hi, it's Bridget Todd, host of There Are No Girls on the Internet. Listen, technology has made our lives easier in some ways, but it's also made us homebodies, scrolling mindlessly. Well, you get the point. Let Rails to Trails Conservancy unstick you from home. When you get out on a trail and get to walking, you'll feel so good. Trust me. You'll see that being out on the trail is so much more than a day outside. It's good for your soul. Get ideas for getting outside on the trail from Rails to Trails Conservancy, the nation's largest trails, walking, and biking advocacy organization. Visit railstotrails.org/iHeart and on social media at Rails to Trails. So in 2024, one of my goals is to finally get serious about my finances. It's been kind of a big emotional thing for me. Thinking about money historically has caused me a lot of anxiety and stress because I have a lot of trauma related to money. And if you can relate, if that sounds like you, check out Fearless Finance. Fearless Finance provides on-demand, comprehensive financial planning by the hour. It's a new way to get financial advice without all the headaches, high fees, and commitments that come with traditional financial advisors. Fearless Finance planners don't sell anything. No used car salesman vibe here. And that means no concerns about being sold something just for the commission that it earns a rep. Their planners meet you where you are on your financial journey. No judgment, whether you're looking to buy a house, optimize your savings, or just want to make sure your finances are okay. They can answer your questions and help you achieve your goals. No question is too small, no problem is too big. Fearless Finance is making financial advice more affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually, and they charge by the hour. Visit fearlessfinance.com today to get started. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit. And you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use code GIRLS.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Let's get right back into it.
Speaking of unethical, deceptive behavior, what's going on at Sports Illustrated?
Okay, this is a very weird story. There's already been a couple of cases of media outlets publishing bad, inaccurate, AI-generated content. It happened at AV Club and BuzzFeed. But what's happening at Sports Illustrated is really something. So the tech media outlet Futurism found that Sports Illustrated not only published AI-generated pieces, but also attributed those pieces to fake journalists with fake names and fake, very specific bios whose headshots were all found on a website that sells AI-generated headshots. Futurism spoke to somebody at Sports Illustrated who didn't want to be named for obvious reasons, who said, "This happens all the time." This person said, "There's a lot," they told us, "of the fake authors. I was like, what are they? This is ridiculous. This person does not exist." At the bottom of the page, there would be a photo of a person and some fake description of them, like, "Oh, John lives in Houston, Texas. He loves yard games and hanging out with his dog, Sam." Stuff like that. It's just crazy.
Do you think they, like, A-B tested where John lives and whether he has a dog or a cat and what the pet's name is?
I feel like something is going on because I looked at some of the bios and they're all so specific. Like, something is, they've done something, whether it's A-B testing to figure out what people like or what works or whatever, something's up.
We got 20% more reads when he lived in Houston than St. Louis.
Swap that dog out for a cat and we're good to go. So you might be asking yourself, are the articles any good? Well, they kind of sound like they were written by aliens. Here's one line from an AI-generated neutral white young adult male with short brown hair and blue eyes, as he is described in the AI headshot website where his image came from. Drew Ortiz is the journalist.
Wait, Drew Ortiz is a neutral white young adult male with short brown hair and blue eyes?
That's correct. That's how Drew Ortiz, the journalist, is described on this AI headshot website.
Sure.
So Ortiz warns that the sport of volleyball, quote, can be a little tricky to get into, especially without an actual ball to practice with.
Wait, what happened to his ball?
They don't have him on the planet Florglon.
All he wanted to do was move to Earth and practice volleyball.
Futurism reached out to the magazine's publisher, the Arena Group. Suddenly, all of the articles were deleted. That's suspicious.
Maybe they were beamed up.
So after Futurism published their report, the Arena Group did put out a statement. The statement is, I'll just let y'all decide for yourselves. Today, an article is published alleging that Sports Illustrated published AI-generated articles. According to our initial investigation, this is not accurate. The articles in question were product reviews and were licensed content from an external third-party company, Advon Commerce. A number of Advon's e-commerce articles ran on certain Arena websites. We continually monitor partners and were in the midst of review when these allegations were raised. Advon has assured us that all of the articles in question were written and edited by humans. According to Advon, their writers, editors, and researchers create and curate content and follow a policy that involves using counter-plagiarism and counter-AI software on all content. However, we have learned that Advon had writers use a pen or pseudonym in certain articles to protect author privacy, actions we don't condone, and are removing the content while our internal investigation continues and have such ended the partnership. Weird.
So they were protecting author privacy in the article about volleyball?
That's right. That is some sensitive stuff. You can't have, you think Drew Ortiz, this neutral blue-eyed guy, is going to have his name? He's a dog owner from Texas, Mike. You think he needs his heat?
He just wants to contemplate practicing volleyball in the privacy of his own Texan home.
So it honestly sounds like their big investigation into this was like asking this company, like, hey, are these articles AI generated? And Advon was like, nah. And they were like, okay, cool. And what's also weird is their statement. It's like, okay, they were, it was humans. It was actual humans. using pen names. They don't address why they would need to be using pen names for like articles about volleyball. They also don't address why their pictures were from AI headshot vendors either. Like, the whole thing just stinks to high heaven to me.
Yeah, it's obviously nonsense. It's like they were in the middle of a review when the allegations were raised. Why? They're just like constantly reviewing everything that their vendor writes for them.
It's so silly. And I think that, like, as ridiculous as this is, like, at the end of the day, readers do deserve to be told that the content they're reading is AI generated or if it's written by a human, I think. Like, I don't want to empathize with, like, neutral, blue-eyed Drew Ortiz if he's not a real person. I deserve to know if he's a real person or not. And I do think, you know, as funny as all this is, it does underscore how I've been feeling about the state of the internet lately, where everything feels like a scam or a lie to make somebody money. Like, it sounds like these reviews, probably Sports Illustrated might get a kickback if people like click through or like buy the thing or whatever. I just feel like, how can anybody trust anything they come across online in a digital landscape like that?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a funny story about Drew and his dreams of someday touching a volleyball, but it is kind of a bleak story about how, like, what the hell is anything?
The Futurism piece put it really well. They wrote, "The undisclosed AI content is a direct affront to the fabric of media ethics. In other words, not to mention a perfect recipe for eroding reader trust. At the end of the day, it's just remarkably irresponsible behavior that we shouldn't see anywhere, let alone normalized by a high visibility publisher." And it does scare me that, like, this is the way the internet is going. Just AI generated gobbledygook that doesn't really make sense. Scams and platforms just trying to generate revenue.
Yeah, it is a weird time for the internet. It does feel like everything is lies and scams and deception. And, you know, when you think about brands like Sports Illustrated that aren't actually real media outlets, but do have like big brand visibility, doing stuff like this where they're just lying and purporting that their articles are written by humans when they're AI, you kind of can't blame those TikTok creators for getting in on the action and doing some illegal scammy stuff of their own, right? Like, if everybody else is doing it, why not them?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a hate the game, not the player kind of situation where it's like, it's hard for me. I don't necessarily feel sympathy for TikTok creators who are like scamming people. But I do think that they are but small players in a larger system of scams and exploitation that I think people have come to expect online. And it's really a problem. And I will say, Sports Illustrated today, I don't think is like a well-respected publication, certainly high visible. John Updike used to publish there. Like, it is an organization that had a legacy. And I think an outlet like Sports Illustrated that did have a legacy starts doing this kind of thing where they're just like churning out fake AI volleyball stories by not alien Drew Ortiz, it really says something about how far we've fallen. I genuinely hope and kind of believe that we will get to a better place, a place where people can trust what they read online, trust that it is written by humans, trust that it has been vetted, trust that it is accurate. When you click a link, it's not going to be some sort of scam or bot or some other kind of exploitation. It is going to be actual information, actual connection, because we deserve it.
Yeah, let's get there.
So we are actually working on an episode right now that I'm really excited about, all about just what I was just talking about, AI-generated fake women in tech to catfish people into checking out a tech conference. If you heard about that story or saw it popping off on Twitter, it was a real doozy. So yeah, rest assured, we saw it too. We were going to talk about it on the newscast, but honestly, I have so much to say about it that it would have been the whole newscast. So we're doing a whole episode about it. Keep an eye out for that next week. If you know what I'm talking about, if you know, you know. If you don't know, trust me, it is a wild ride. You're going to want to listen. I'm very excited to talk about it.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear that. That's going to be a good one.
Also, it is officially Spotify Wrapped season. Happy Spotify Wrapped season, Mike.
Thank you, Bridget. Happy Spotify Wrapped season to you as well.
So over on the Patreon, we're digging into Spotify Wrapped, and I'm exposing my own Spotify Wrapped most played songs. I did it on the main feed, I think like last year, and it was really embarrassing. This year, I have to put it behind the Patreon because it's not great. I'll give folks a little hint. Third Eye Blind. I'll leave it there. You can check it out at tangodi.com/Patreon.
Yeah. And in addition to Spotify Wrapped season, it is now officially holiday season since Thanksgiving has passed. And folks can get some sweet Tangodi merch for everybody in their gift giving list at tangodi.com/store. Check it out.
We're throwing all the plugs.
Yeah.
Buy our crap, people.
Yeah, we started with banter. We're plugging stuff at the end.
We're really like polishing this podcast up. All of the stuff.
We should get some AI in here to like write the content for us.
I know a guy, Drew Ortiz. Neutral, blue-eyed, human male in search of volleyball one day.
Well, thanks for having me here, Bridget. This was fun. I enjoyed the banter. I enjoyed the news, and I enjoyed the friendship.
See you on the internet.
If you're looking for ways to support the show, check out our merch store at tangodi.com/store. Got a story about an interesting thing in tech or just want to say hi? You can reach us at hello@tangodi.com. You can also find transcripts for today's episode at tangodi.com. There Are No Girls on the Internet was created by me, Bridget Todd. It's a production of iHeartRadio and Unboss Creative, edited by Joey Pat. Jonathan Strickland is our executive producer. Tari Harrison is our producer and sound engineer. Michael Amato is our contributing producer. I'm your host, Bridget Todd. If you want to help us grow, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Looking for hair removal tools that not only deliver smooth results, but also empower you with a sense of complete control? Enter Conair Girl Bomb, your secret weapons for smooth, sleek results, made just for women. From the ultimate Girl Bomb grip and professional-grade blades, you don't have to compromise and settle for less. Conair Girl Bomb equips you with the precision and power previously reserved for men's grooming tools. So take your hair removal routine to the next level with Conair Girl Bomb. Available at conairgirlbomb.com or a retailer near you.
We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card. You call the number for help and you can't get a hold of anyone. If only you had a Discover card. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right, a real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discovery.com/creditcard.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.